seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
And it's my pleasure to sit in for Maria today. I'm Dave Meekham alongside, of course,
Maria
Ton.
Might be a little jealous or upset with me for bringing Kent in today instead of...
Think about where Maria is.
Yeah, she's in Florida.
She'll be fine.
Fresh oranges, papayas.
You know,
she's in a good spot.
Let her have that fun. We're going to have this fun because, Kent, you've brought how many varieties of apples for us to try today?
Oh, today I brought with me four different varieties. A couple of those varieties are varieties you've probably never heard of, and then a couple of them you probably have heard of.
Tell us about them.
So the first one that I brought is called a Braeburn. So this is an apple that was discovered in New Zealand, and it is a very firm, crunchy apple that is – it's a later season apple. It's tart. And it is a little sweet as well. In storage, it'll start to sweeten up a little bit more. But it's a great eating apple. It's great to bake with. I also brought another apple that I think just about everybody's heard of. It's called Honeycrisp.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I will say the Braeburn was very common in stores until about 10 to 15 years ago.
I've had Braeburn. And I've purchased that in stores before.
Growing through the 70s, 80s, early 90s. But... Kent and some other local growers have the few trees left in local orchards. And so if you want Braeburn, oftentimes the only place you're going to find it is a local gardener's market.
Yeah. And so, the Braeburn is, we see that a lot with the apples. If you've gone into a grocery store and looked over where the apples are, you probably, every time you go, you see a new variety. Like, I've never heard of this.
Right.
You know, that's kind of slowed down a little bit, but... some of the names are pretty fun too. I got another apple here. It's called Elliott Gold, and this was a local apple that was discovered in Provo, and it's something that I don't even know anyone else who grows it anymore. There's an orchard up in the Fruit Highway up in the Perry area that had some, and I don't know if they still do have them. But it's a great apple. It's a sweet apple. It's a yellow apple, so it's not as popular for some reason. I guess yellow apples are just not as popular as red apples, but it's a great apple, and we'll have to try that here in just a minute. And then the last apple that I brought is called Ludacrisp. So I like to I like to say it with a little pizzazz. But this is one of those apples that earlier in the show, Ton brought up the Midwest Apple Improvement Association, and this is an association that was created by growers, and this was to help growers. Combat the fact that they couldn't be part of the club. And so it's their own club, and it's open to any commercial grower. It doesn't matter how big you are. And they just charge you $100 a year to be a member, and that's it. So you can order as many or as few trees as you would like. And they've got some fantastic varieties. And so I thought to bring that today just because that's the only one that I have that's bearing as of right now.
I think Ludacris used to be Ton's stage name when he was a rapper.
MC Ludacrisp.
Well, Luda was popular anyway, but I love the apple name.
That's a great name for an apple. I mean, I can't wait to try it.
Yeah, when I have it out on the table and I have the name written down next to it, and when people read it or they hear it, they're like, "Wait, what?" You know, they're like, "I've got to try that." And this is the first year if I had a decent sized crop. The trees are only 2 years old. But it's been pretty popular, so been happy with it.
Well, I'm excited to try these. I think we probably ought to try them during the break, though, because nobody wants to listen to us
eating
crunching
on air. But we also brought in some fresh, locally squeezed apple juice, and there are a lot of local growers, whether up in Box Elder County or down in Utah County or in between, that will juice a lot of their apples. And every grower has their own recipe, that goes into that. And so you can taste these against each other, and there are differences in the flavors of the juice and the ciders. And so not hard cider. We're drinking regular cider.
Yes.
Let's clarify that.
But Kent, you've also brought some donuts that you made.
Yeah. So during the summer and the fall, we do apple cider donuts. During the winter time, not so much. It just happened to be that we had made some last night. So I guess, you know, sorry to bring day-old donuts. But,
oh, how dare you.
That's about as good as we can get for right now.
Just for that, I'm going to eat them.
So a couple months ago, Ken had an event up here at the Delta Center, and he was firing up his apple cider donut trailer. And it's like this little mini food truck that they make the apple cider donuts fresh. And I got to go over. It was like 10:30 at night.
Like, and we were awake, Ton?
Yeah, we had a powwow in his shed eating these fresh donuts, and they are delicious.
Oh, man. Sounds like I need to move.
Trying to be neighborly, that's all.
And so the purpose of this is just to tell people that there are other varieties of apples out there. If you haven't heard of it, it's probably okay. And especially for local growers at gardeners markets or their own roadside stands, you know, if they're a smaller grower, you know, some of these big popular club apples will just never grow here. But I think in a lot of cases, like these apples that we haven't heard of because of the care that's given and just they're fresh picked, they're just a lot better tasting apple than what you would get from some of the chain stores.
Well, I'm excited to try these. And so we'll do that during the break. But before we go to break, Ton, Sue has been patiently waiting. And Sandy, she wants to talk about wild onions, which is kind of a theme for the show so far this morning. You never know where the shows are going to go. And today's apparently a wild onion day. But Sue, thanks for calling in. And you want to talk about wild onions?
Yes, top of the morning to y'all.
Thanks for calling.
How do you obtain wild onions?
And short of digging them, if it's legal, you don't. Unless, you know, there are native plant growers and native plant groups that you could probably find some. You know, places like, there's some mail order seed companies out of Colorado, High Country Gardens out of New Mexico, places like that. But, and again, if you plant them, you need to keep them contained because they will go wild and they will take over and they're hard to get rid of.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. One more question that I have. What is the best thing to put on my compost piles? I have two big composts to break them down, to break
in
them
the
down
winter?
Quick.
Or just in general? Well,
just in general, because I had a lot of apples that I had to throw in there because I had worms.
Oh, boy, man.
And I put grass and I've put leaves, but what is something, is there a chemical or
some nitrogen fertilizer, just straight nitrogen, 20-00, it's a couple handfuls in there, stir it in, do that every few weeks. With so many apples in there, the compost may be a bit wet, and so you might want to add some sawdust or dry grass clippings as you move forward to keep the balance. You want to use about one part brown matter to one part green matter, and the green matter is the fresh whatever, even though the apples aren't probably green.
Right. Okie dokie. Hey, thank you so much, and y'all have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call, Sue. Composting is a whole other topic we'll have to get into at some point, because right now it's probably on a lot of people's minds.
It is.
But we are going to take a break here so we can sample some apples. I'm looking forward to this. And when we come back on the other side of this break, we'll have a full report for you. So thanks for being with us this morning. We'll be back with more after this break on the KSL Greenhouse Show. I'm hurrying, trying to get my apple swallowed there, Ton.
There are some good apples.
They are wonderful apples. And by far my favorite there is that Elliott Gold. It's really, really a good apple. Kit.
Yeah, it's a sweet apple with a kick. You know, that's what I tell people when they, what's it like? And I usually let them try it, but sweet with a kick.
I was just getting ready to order my bushel for next year. You probably still have a supply of apples. I could probably get one now, maybe.
Yeah, well, we're just about out of those for the season. We don't have a whole lot of those trees, but you know, I have enough to take to the farmer's market probably this week and next, and then they'll be gone for the season.
I am going to have to place my order today. That's an excellent apple. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a really good one. I mean, it's, you know, Honeycrisp is probably the most popular apple right now. I don't know if it's the most consumed apple because it is a little more expensive, but, you know, the Honeycrisp is a great apple, and they've actually, a lot of nurseries and a lot of companies have used that as like one of the apples to breed new varieties from is mix Honeycrisp with, you know, like a Fuji or with a Gold or with something else. And they've come up with some really good apples.
And it is an excellent apple. But, you know, ironically, and my daughters, that's probably their favorite apple. But of the four you brought, I put it at the bottom of the list. They're all really good. But I would probably rank the Ludacrisp second and then the Braeburn and then the Honeycrisp.
Yeah. You never know. I mean, everyone wants Honeycrisp just because that's the in apple. That's the popular apple. It's got the name brand recognition. It's got a great name, too, and it is a good apple, but there
it's
are
tough
so
to
many
grow.
More. Yeah, and, you know, you can grow a good yield from Honeycrisp. The problem with that is that they're so sensitive towards a lot of things. They bruise easy. They can split easy. They can get a calcium deficiency issue, which is called bitter pit. And so sometimes they get storage rot too. So the longer you keep them, sometimes you're getting more and more apples that are unsellable. So yeah, there's some issues, and that's one of the reasons why it's one of the more expensive apples, if not the most expensive apple.
Yeah, Art. And so, you know, maybe you can answer this or can't talk. If somebody wants to grow one of these particular varieties in their backyard, mm-hmm. which ones are available to them?
They could grow a Braeburn. They could grow a Honeycrisp. The Ludacrisp is, like I said earlier, you have to be a member, and it's only for commercial growers. It's not for backyard growers, unfortunately. The Elliott Gold, it did have a patent on it, but as far as I know, it has expired, and so you would just need to find somebody that would give you some grafts, some wood to be able to make your own tree. But I don't know any nursery that actually currently sells it.
That's a toughie. And I'll tell you what, that's a wonderful apple. I really, yeah. really, really like it.
Yeah.
Everyone's staring at me, and I just like, I like apples.
We're waiting for Tom to weigh in.
No, a lot of these apples, you know, we're talking about Golden Delicious is fading out, and you don't hardly find it in the stores anymore, and this Opal's trying to take over as the new Golden. But, you know, a lot of my favorite apples you can't find anymore. You know, and a good sweet apple is a good sweet apple. And one thing about the apples I really like is the flavor differences. You know, you've got really tart on one end with like a granny, and then you've got super sweet on the other end, like this Elliott Gold or the Golden Delicious. And if you really start to taste them, there's a lot of flavor differences. But, you know, the advantage to having this available locally is that you can get apples that are not in the stores. And you might only be able to get them for 6 or 8 weeks out of the year. And so these roadside stands and the gardener's markets are great places to visit if you like apples, because you will find things that you will never find otherwise.
I think that I'm to the point where the Golden apples, I prefer them over the reds.
Yeah, you said you like the Opal.
I love the Opal.
Now you like the Elliott Gold.
Yeah.
There's other yellow apples out there that aren't really a mainstream variety. You know, there's Ginger Gold, which is an earlier apple, which is a pretty good apple. And then there are there's another one that I grow that it's too young to have brought, but it's called Crunch a Bunch, which is kind of I'm not a big fan of the name, but it you know, the first time I bit into that, I was at a trade show back in Michigan, and I bit into that apple, and I almost fell backwards. It was such a strong flavor. It's almost like an apple and a lemon had a baby, and it was just an explosive flavor. So I planted some of those. But yeah, I mean, it's really interesting and fun to see all the different flavor profiles just from these apples.
Well, that Crunch a Bunch, Kent ambushed me last summer. He's like, you should try this. And it was like it was fairly tart, but it would be a great baking apple.
It kind of sounds like you're describing a Pink Lady.
It's much more tart than a Pink Lady.
Stronger, huh?
Like a really strong citrusy flavor to
Interesting.
It.
Interesting.
So, yeah, like literally like a lemon and an apple had a baby.
What would you call that, a limple? I don't know. I would like to try one, a Crunch a Bunch, huh?
Yeah, and there's a lot of other yellow apple varieties out there, and it's I think the nurseries don't push it a lot just because, you know, with all the data, it shows that they really like a dark red sweet apple. That's kind of what.
Well, and it's funny because as you breed the apples to get that dark red color, especially with apples like the modern Red Delicious, it's inversely proportional to the flavor. And the redder the apple, the less flavor it usually gets. And so I see people breeding for red Galas and red Fujis. I was like, man, those striped Fujis, the green with red striping, is generally going to be a much better apple than, say, a red Fuji.
That's my experience as well. When I pick out those apples, if I'm buying Fuji, I want a good mix of color.
You want a striped Fuji because they may be more flavorful.
Yeah. And Red Delicious, when I see them in the store, it's a non-starter. I don't even consider Red
Well,
Delicious.
I will say that Kent has, there are dozens of strains of Red Delicious. And a lot of the local farmers that still grow it and sell it at markets actually take the care to test the sugar levels leave it. A lot of the Red Delicious you see in the stores are picked when they're colored up and they're not allowed to ripen. And so they just have that mealy kind of apple flavor. But if you let those reds, even the modern varieties, ripen and pick them at the optimal time, they actually can be an okay apple. You know, they're not my favorite, but I've had those reds that the growers have let ripen and done the Brix testing on, and they're not a bad apple.
Okay, I will try one of Kent's then.
You know, it's here's a quick funny story. So I you know, when I have a table full of different apple varieties and I have Red Delicious there, I hardly sell any Red Delicious. But if I sample and I say, here, try this apple, and they're like, what is it? And I go, I'm not going to tell you. just try it because I don't want you to have any kind of bias.
Yeah.
And they'll be, oh, this is a pretty good apple. And I'll be like, oh, that was a Red Delicious. And it's kind of like their head wants to explode because they're like, oh, it's supposed to not be good.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, and there are some pretty miserable Red Delicious out there. I will admit that. But, you know, like Ton says, if you pick them when they're supposed to be picked and they're relatively fresh, they can actually be a pretty good apple.
Okay. I'm going to try one of Kent's. I will hold an open mind and we'll give Red Delicious another chance. We need to jump out and take a break, though. We're a little late here. And on the other side of news, traffic, and weather, we've been back with more Apple Talk and your calls. 575-KSL-TALK. 575-00 is the number if you want to text us. So KSL Talk, we do have lines open. Call us and we'll help answer your questions. We'll be back on the other side of news on KSL.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
And we're back with the KSL Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Had a lot of fun so far this morning doing some official apple taste testing, something I've never been able to do before, and it's been a lot of fun, Ton.
Yeah, I know Larry used to do this quite often. Ray Allred used to come in, and they would do apple tastings. Allreds are another family that grow a lot of varieties of apples. And they're in the Payson and Genola areas, and then they have a shop in Provo. We've got the Red Barn in Santaquin.
Yeah, there's the Red Barn in Santaquin, then you got Wall Brothers.
Wall Brothers, Barn, and Orem in Spanish. And then going north, you've got all sorts of stuff through fruit on the famous Fruitway through Box Elder County.
Yeah.
But a lot of these growers are also at the local gardeners markets. And so there's lots of places to get fresh local produce.
And guess what, guys? Bart's back. And he's got some inside info on the Elliott Gold apples. So
let's
check in with Bart and see what inside dirt do you have for us on
Hey, you guys,
Elliott Golds.
You know, years ago, I supervised the horticulture building at the state fair for 26 years. And this guy came in, his name was Elliott, and he had this apple. He was looking for Larry, but he brought some of the apples, and I ate them then. This is 15 or 20 years ago. And I understood from him he was planning on changing the name to Mount Nebo Apple.
I've heard that.
And I always look for it coming back as that. But I think he told me it came up as a sport in his orchard. He didn't cross it or anything. It was either a gift from the apple gods or just one that happened to come up, and he cultivated it and turned it into a really good eating apple.
Well, I'm here to tell you, I think it's wonderful. I think it's an excellent apple.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Apple.
They're a yellow apple with a red blush.
Yeah, it is a great apple. It's,
yeah.
You know, Grant Elliott really did try hard to get that into the commercial market. And there was a nursery in California that did pick it up, and they offered it in their catalog.
I think he told me he was going to try to send it to Washington State to to get it propagated.
Yeah.
But I think it just came up out in his orchard as a sport.
Yeah, it just was in the middle of his field. He was plowing, and he decided to let it grow, and that's what it was. Just
well, you never want. If I find something strange growing in the garden, I don't throw it away automatically because you never know what the birds and the gods deposit in your yard.
Well, a lot of our popular apples over the years, the Red Delicious, Golden Delicious, and Cameo were all chance seedlings that people allowed to grow.
Yeah, I've got one apple tree, but I got seven varieties of apples, and this year it had four apples on it and three varieties.
Huh.
Lodi apple was two of them, and the other was an old-fashioned Red Delicious and a Golden Delicious. So,
cool.
It was just an off year for it.
Well, thank you for adding to our
yeah, but that
our
Elliot was
base.
A nice guy.
Yeah.
And he was looking for Larry. He came in twice, but he never did find Larry. He only found me. So I was a beneficiary of these apples.
You were indeed. Well, thanks for the call, Bart.
Yeah, bye.
Have a good one. All right. And we've got Joanne waiting on the line, calling in from Bountiful. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. I'm looking out the window. It's snowing at my house, so
isn't it great?
Merry Christmas. And that's what I want to talk to you about. I have been given Christmas cactus that's just loaded with lots of blooms and a lot of buds. But the buds are dropping off, and I'm wondering why.
It could be, if you were just given it, it could be shock from being moved.
Mm, okay.
And it's healthy. It's just that sometimes when you move those, that can happen. And so what I would, where are you keeping it right now? Not, I don't need like in my bit. Just like near a window, what are you doing with it?
It's on the wall between two windows facing east.
Okay. So you've got two windows on either side. So what I would do to see if it'll form new buds is put it as close to one of the windows you can, like in the window. You
okay.
don't want the branches touching the window itself, but to form new buds, it needs to be exposed to temperatures consistently for about 8 to 10 weeks below 50 or 55. And so if you leave the side of it near the window for that long and then turn it, and it may even form more buds. But that's how you're going to, if it will, that's how you're going to get it to form more buds.
Okay. So sit it directly in front of a window.
Yes.
And you want the cool temperature for it.
You do, around 50 to 55 degrees. Those are native to Mexico and to South America, but that what causes them to produce the flower buds are reduced light levels during the winter, even though it's a tropical area, and uh-huh. cooler temperatures.
Okay. All righty. I'll try it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
All right. Good luck, Joanne. Merry Christmas to you. Oh, man. There's what are the – you've got Christmas cactus. You've
Thanksgiving.
Got, you've got
Thanksgiving cactus and Easter cactus.
Okay. I was just thinking of Christmas plants. You've got mistletoe, I guess, would be a Christmas plant in a way. You've got poinsettias, which we've already talked about. You've got live Christmas trees. What are all the Christmas plants?
Well, you've got a lot of them. The other really popular one are the Norfolk Island pine, and we'll talk about that in a week or two. But it's the kind of the upside down Christmas tree you see, where the top is wider than the bottom.
Hmm.
They are trained in modern times to look like a Christmas tree, but it's a conifer. It's actually distantly related to pine trees. It's not a true pine. And Norfolk Island pine is in a genus that was around when the dinosaurs were, very ancient.
Wow.
Monkey puzzle tree is another species in the genus. And then there's a few more, but monkey puzzle is one that hobbyists will sometimes grow. And so these trees are native to South America, New Zealand, Australia, New Caledonia, some islands in the Southern Hemisphere, and they were really there. We have fossil record of them in North America, but they were really at their strongest on a continent called Zealandia that sunk into the ocean.
Right.
And so the remnants of Zealandia, New Caledonia, Norfolk Island, New Zealand, parts of Australia have a lot of these species left. And so at any rate, Norfolk Island pine and monkey puzzle tree, which is native to Chile, are two that we sometimes grow here, but especially Norfolk Island is used as the kind of indoor Christmas tree.
Right. It's kind of fun to, I never really thought about there being this group of odd collection of Christmas plants, but they're kind of,
yeah,
is.
And so someone texted in about lemon cypress and wanted to know a little more about it because of, we have three or four different genuses called cypress, and Cupressus is the Italian, the tall narrow trees you see in the Mediterranean climates. You know, Italian cypress is the common name for it. But then you've got Alaskan cypress and then false cypress. And so it just depends on what, if it is Cupressus, you know, it can be used as a Christmas tree, but it won't overwinter here, but other ones may.
Okay. Well, let's jump out and take a break here. And on the side of the break, we'll come back and answer some more questions. Right now we have lines open if you want to call in and ask your question at KSL Talk. Or you can text us at 57500, and we will be back with more on The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. And we're back on the KSL Greenhouse Show. It's been fun to be here. It's been a great day so far, Don. I mean, apple taste testing, we get to talk local agriculture, Christmas plants, and wild onions.
Yeah, it's been a theme of the day. On the break, we were talking about the fresh Christmas trees.
Yes.
And they're here, and the stands are opening up, and just the experience of having to wrap them in lights.
Ken and I were bonding over a similar experience, because, and it helped me tell the story, Ken, but when I was growing up, when you put lights on a tree, You just started
went
on
around
one end
and, side, and you just got dizzy, kind of just spiral your way up.
That's right. Then I get married, and I find that is not the way you put lights on the tree.
No.
And you had the same experience. Tell us, how do you put lights on a tree, Ken?
Yeah, you're supposed to take each individual limb and wrap that. You're supposed to have a lot of lights and wrap that up, each individual limb. Last time I did that, it took me probably 5 or 6 hours, and I told my wife, you can do that next year. And she did. And after that, we've had fake trees every year. So that's it looks great, but it's very time consuming.
Green waste collection places will have signs up saying no tinsel and no lights on the tree, because it's such a pain to get those lights off. People would try recycling the tree, leaving Christmas lights all over it. And the Christmas lights, and I guess I shouldn't be this way, they're so inexpensive that I've known a lot of people to just get wire cutters and just wire cut the lights off the tree and buy new ones the next year, because it's so hard to get them off.
I could never do that. That is too wasteful.
Yeah,
I couldn't do that. But I don't take, when we're done with my, we get a live tree every year. We actually save it and I let it dry out all summer. And then we use that as our Christmas Eve fire.
Your bonfire, backyard bonfire.
No, we put it in the actual fireplace in the house just a little bit at a time, but that's our Christmas Eve fire the next year.
I bet it lights up pretty quick.
Oh yeah. It's one of the few I don't have to use any, you know, any assisted burning. But I love having a live tree, and I love the smell in the house, and I think it's a wonderful thing.
With that, on the live Christmas trees, we will be talking about them a little bit next show, but I wanted to go through and just talk about how to choose a tree. I feel like, what was it, the Christmas story, the dad in the Christmas story that's going over this live tree like he's buying a new car.
Yes.
And that's one of the classic shows. But, you know, these live Christmas trees are mostly grown in the Pacific Northwest that come into Utah and the Idaho Panhandle. And they're cut and then wrapped. And they come in on semis. And by the time they get here, they're oftentimes just a little bit water-starved, being severed from the root system. And so the tree stands and the stores oftentimes will unpack these, cut the wrapping off. And so there's some things you need to do before you want to bring one home. And one of them includes that you tap the tree, lift it up, and just, you don't want to, you know, cause an earthquake, but just tap it and see if needles fall out. And that will tell you, if the needles don't fall out, that it's a fairly fresh tree. So that's one thing. And then you also want to inspect it and just take a quick glance over it and make sure there aren't any travelers, like little bugs on there. You don't want to introduce to your house, so you get those on your house
plants. Like the squirrel and Christmas vacation.
Yes.
Bird's nest.
Yeah, bird's nest squirrels. I'm talking more aphids, spider mites, things of that nature. Then once you get that tree home, you don't want to bring it immediately in. You need to cut an inch or so off the base of the tree and quickly get that tree into water in a stand so that it can absorb new water. And Dave, you've probably experienced this. A new Christmas tree can absorb a couple gallons of water quickly.
Like
yeah.
a day, right?
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like overnight, you're refilling that with water again. And then it does that for a brief time and then it slows right down.
Yeah. And once it's hydrated, you need to check the water daily. But on a larger tree, an 8 or 9 foot tree, it can easily use over a gallon of water a day.
Yeah.
And they do usually slow down, but they need to be checked.
And I always take it as a good sign as long as it's taking water. When it quits taking water, then I go, okay, uh-oh. I think our days are numbered.
Needles are going to start right. dropping.
Yeah.
It's going to be a mess.
I mean, I can't imagine being back in the Victorian era putting real candles all over a Christmas tree.
You know, when I lived in Europe, we did that. We put real candles on the tree.
I mean, that just screams really cool. to me, fire starter.
Yeah, and trust me, we didn't leave the room.
Well, let's get daring and douse this tree in gas before we put the candles on. And no, don't do that.
Yeah, I know it was really cool, but it's certainly not something that I would do all the time. But it was really neat to try it one time. You know, they had these little kind of alligator clamp type of ornaments that would go on the tree, which was a candle holder. And you know, you'd have to find the right branch to put it on, and we did it on a very small tree, but it was really neat to do that at least once and to try that. It was a lot of fun, but there's nothing like having a real tree for Christmas. It's just,
you know,
it's the best.
The scent is nice. And then once you dispose of that tree, and we'll talk about this again, you know, if your city or county supports green waste recycling, you can't have the lights on it. You don't want tinsel on it, but try to recycle those trees because they'll either be ground up and turned into mulch, or they're sometimes used in local reservoirs to provide habitat for small fish.
And not that I'm, you know, saying everybody should go out and do this, but I learned last year that the needles on a pine tree are edible. Did you know that?
Yeah, you can make a tea out of them.
It's like, well, okay, I guess if you really wanted to go hardcore.
Pine needle cookies, right? Could be the new thing.
Oh, man. No, there is a pine needle and spruce tea you can make out of these. And it's kind of I've heard of it more of a survival food that even though you don't get a lot of calories, you'll get some nutrition out of it. But it is a thing to boil pine needles or spruce needles.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because this has been – it was last year at Christmas time that I heard this. And I want to say that one of the ways to consume them is because you don't want to obviously eat these needles whole, right? And so they were grinding them up and putting them in other foods or something. But they are edible, which is
– yeah.
I don't know how anybody discovered that.
But. Yeah, and I don't – it's one of those things that –
it's probably during COVID, right?
Going crazy, so you're eating your Christmas tree. No, so these Christmas trees are pretty good. The one reason, well, there's a few reasons why we import them from the Northwest, and the big one is irrigation. We just don't have the water to have extensive tree farms, but many of the species that we use for Christmas trees are fir. And for the most part, fir trees don't do well along the Wasatch Front because of our dry air and hot temperatures. So the noble firs, the red firs, the balsam firs are all species that really struggle here. You know, the one fir that does kind of okay is called white fir. And then the spruce do quite well. But if you've ever had a Colorado blue spruce Christmas tree, it's a good way to keep the kids out of the Christmas tree because those needles will get you.
We used to get our tree at a Christmas tree farm in Utah County, and it was a lot of fun to go there and find the tree. We'd go up on Labor Day, find the tree, mark it, and then we'd go and cut it down, you know, the day after Thanksgiving. But this is what reminded me, because they had different varieties, and my wife always, no spruce.
Yeah.
Because wrapping each individual spruce branch with lights was painful.
It's almost like, it's not quite as bad, but it's almost if you're putting Christmas lights on a thorny blackberry or a rose, that's kind of the idea with some of the spruce. Now, there are spruce that are softer needled than the Colorado spruce, but, you know, the fir trees are the ones that we generally purchase.
Right. And another thing I learned about Christmas trees, you know, by talking to the folks that operated this farm was it was an average of 15 years to get a tree to where you could cut it down and have it the right size for a Christmas tree. Long time. Long time.
Yeah. You think about sometimes farmers who grow fruit, they sell it to a packing house. They have to wait sometimes several months to get paid. Can you imagine growing something for several years and then,
yeah,
that'd be
all
tough.
Right, we got to jump out and take a break. And on the other side of news, we'll be back with more of your questions on the KSL Greenhouse Show.